Hi, everyone. It's Mark LaPointe here, and I just wanted to take a minute to introduce this two-part series on tech-savvy parenting. Brian Hausman is my guest, and he's the author of Tech-Savvy Parenting, Navigating Your Child's Digital Life. And we spent a good deal of time talking about things like texting, cell phone use, internet use, social media, and things like that. And so I decided to split this into two parts simply because there's a lot of great information that Brian shares with us, and I think it's of huge value to parents. So today, I just wanted to introduce part one, where we talk about texting, cell phone use, and we begin to have a discussion on social media. And in that, in all of that, we don't necessarily talk about how as parents we can restrict that use, but how we can have good communication with our kids on the responsible use of those things. So without further ado, here's part one of my interview with Brian Hausman, author of Tech Savvy Parenting.
Welcome to the Stuff for Parents podcast. From schooling to parenting and everything else in between, we talk all about the stuff that comes with being a parent. Here's your host, Mark LaPointe.
Welcome back to the Stuff for Parents podcast. As always, I'm Mark LaPointe, your host. Texting, social media, cyberbullying, pornography. When it comes to our kids and technology, these are all areas that we as parents have questions about. As always, whenever I'm looking to tackle a pretty complex and important topic, I look for support from the experts. So joining me today is Brian Hausman, author of the book Tech Savvy Parenting, Navigating Your Child's Digital Life. So Brian is a former youth pastor. He was a youth pastor for 13 years. He now is a full-time speaker. He's a writer. He's a regular guest on the Fox News in Memphis. He also contributes to NBC and the ABC affiliates and really has a lot of experience with the different media outlets. So welcome to the Stuff for Parents podcast, Brian.
Hey, Mark. I'm so glad to be with you guys and with your listeners out there today.
Yeah, perfect. And can you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself? I know I've touched on some of the things you do, but I think it would be great if you tell more about your involvement in 360 Family and all of the different things you do in terms of your speaking.
Yeah, well, I had about 10 years ago, I'd created a workshop for parents at the church where I was serving, and we ended up having a PTA president from a local high school who was there, and she invited me to come do the presentation for all the parents at that high school. It's about high school of about 2,000 students, and we had a great turnout. And then the mayor, local mayor of a county next to ours, called and said he was doing a speaker symposium, asked me to come be a keynote speaker. Well, then the Tennessee State PTA conference was coming up, and they asked me to come be a keynote speaker at their state conference with the governor. And before you know it, I was quitting my job and started doing it full time. And now I do a monthly column for Parenting Teens magazine, but I get to contribute to about five or six different magazines, national parenting magazines that contact me and ask me to write articles for them. And then we had created our own conference called a Parent Summit, and we've done 101 of those all across the United States and internationally in Korea, Japan, Guatemala, Mexico. And so it's been amazing just seeing the opportunities that have come through writing and speaking to parents. I'm also a parent myself. My wife and I, Mona, have been married for 21 years, and I have two teenagers. Then we are right in the thick of all of this tech stuff ourselves. And so really, that's the most important thing I want your listeners to know is there is no such thing as an expert on parenting. You know, I'm in process just like you guys are. Well, every day is a learning process, figuring out how do we navigate technology? How do we use it in an honoring way in our own family?
So, Brian, I know you don't want to say that you're an expert, but you sound to me like you're the perfect guest for this topic, given your experience. and like you, I'm in the thick of it as well. I have two teenage kids. So everything that you have to share and everything that I read in your book is of particular interest to me. So I'm actually really excited to get into some of this. So why don't you tell us about your book, Tech Savvy Parenting?
Well, I wrote it because I had so many parents. You know, I would go to schools, churches, military bases, community centers, and was doing workshops on things like kind of a state of the address of adolescent culture. And we'd talk about everything from sexuality to movies, music, all kind of stuff that influences our kids. And just about every single time I would go someplace during the Q&A, parents would inevitably begin to ask questions about technology. So I just started looking, and I really enjoy writing about things that I don't see other people writing about. And what I couldn't find was an easy-to-use handbook for parents that was in full color so that when you look at it, it was just like reading it, looking at it on the web or looking at it on your Kindle, your iPad. And so that's what we wanted to tackle, was trying to write something that was visually pleasing and easy to understand for parents. And I don't want to sound, you know, arrogant in any way, but I feel like we came pretty darn close to that. You know, it's been very humbling, just the responses we've gotten back from parents, you know, who said, oh my gosh, for the first time, I finally know how to talk to my 9-year-old about digital pornography, or I finally feel like I've got a grasp on how to set some boundaries with my 11-year-old when it comes to video games, or, you know, I've got a 16-year-old who's sending thousands of text messages a month, and I've never known how to address this with my child, you know, how to help them protect their digital reputation. And so it's been very exciting seeing the responses from parents.
Well, I can certainly attest to, you know, some of the things you mentioned about your book. It is easy to read, but not in a dumbed down way. It's simply, it's from my impression, is that it's very common sense. And it's amazing that these are things that, you know, if as parents, concerned parents, we give some time to think about, we would. But sometimes we just need somebody who can point those things out to us and make it, present it in an easy way. And yeah, you're right. There's a lot of visuals in here which are really helpful. Actually, there's going to be something that I'm going to be reading a little bit later, which is directly is a visual from your book, which I think is really helpful. It really helps you get through the material. I would say quickly, but in an efficient manner, and it's memorable as well. So, like I said, I can personally attest to that. So,
well, thank you so much. I know that's been for me. I wanted to write it in such a way that, like you said, it wasn't dumbed down, but just made the information accessible, and really was trying to be encouraging. One of the things I repeat over and over in the book is that we don't have to be afraid of technology as a parent, and that's usually what we are. You know, we. Mm-hmm. You know, our cell phone breaks and you have to go to the cell phone store and you walk in with a cold sweat thinking, I don't want to learn how to use a new cell phone, you know? And with our kids, technology is just, it's such an integrated thing in their life. It's almost intuitive for them to know how to use this stuff. And so the hope was that we could write something that was an encouraging and just kind of gave parents a nudge, you know, towards saying, come on, buck up, you know, you can do this, hang in there.
Well, you've hit your mark, I think. So, you know, I know we can't talk about every aspect of your book in detail, but there's going to be a few things that I definitely want to focus on and things that I think are important for parents to think about. And, of course, at the end, I really want to encourage parents, if they're interested in getting more information, to not only visit your website, which we'll talk about at the end, but to purchase your book as well. But one of the biggest things, I think, and you just mentioned it, is the cell phone. So 10 years ago, and I used to be a classroom teacher, so, and that was years ago. So, you know, the idea of my students at that time bringing cell phones into the classroom was preposterous. And then thinking about my own kids who were very young at the time, having cell phones, that just seemed ridiculous to me. Why would they ever need that?
Right.
Now they're teenagers, and each of them, I have a daughter and a son, each of them have their own cell phone. So, so many parents, myself included, you know, we're trying to find the right balance. We want our kids to use their cell phones and, of course, texting responsibly. But we also understand that in this day and age, it's like a lifeline to their friends. So what do you advise parents in terms of boundaries and phone etiquette?
Well, some of the things are, I think a lot of times we as parents are just as guilty as our kids are when it comes to poor etiquette, you know, with the cell phone. I've lost count of how many times I've been in meetings with other parents and their cell phone rings, and they'll kind of hold up their finger to me like, hang on just a second, and answer their cell phone. Oh. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is not good etiquette. I'm a living, breathing person in front of you. And so, you know, that's one of the most important things I think with the phone is, just helping our kids, you know, set aside all the potential danger stuff right now. You use the word etiquette, you know, so let's deal with that. That, you know, one is, you know, look me in the eye, you know, that if I'm having a conversation with you as my child, then I want you to look me in the eye while we're talking to each other. And that if my phone rings, I agree, I'm not going to answer it, you know, when I'm with you and vice versa. And so when I go into meetings, when I'm having sit downs, coffees with other people, I turn my phone off or I turn it on silent. And I am not averse to or opposed to calling you out, you know, as a parent, as an adult, if you answer your phone when you're in a meeting with me, because I think we've got to raise the bar for our kids to show them how to use this stuff properly. The other thing is just kind of location boundaries. You know, what's big in our family is we agree that we're not going to have any technology at the dinner table. And we really are committed that at least 3 to 4 days a week, we eat dinner together as a family, even with teenagers, you know, in our family, because that's like the one time we can agree we're going to connect with each other. And so we say no screens at all allowed at the dinner table. And that includes me. So I don't bring my cell phone, my laptop, my iPad, anything comes to the dinner table. So I'm thinking just for 5 minutes, you know, we can have that time of the day where we're going to look at each other and have a conversation with one another, hear each other's voices. The other I would say is just some when it comes to the amount of texting. You know, I know almost all of us, we've got unlimited texting packages on our cell phones now. But I think it's important even to show our kids some moderation in terms of, you know, maybe limit, you know, them to the average teenager now sends almost 4,000 text messages a month, which is astounding. You know, maybe you say, hey, we're going to limit it to 2,000 a month, you know, just to, so that if you need to talk to me, you call me. You know, for instance, if your kid wants to ask for permission to stay out later, you know, than curfew or to go to someone's house other than you agreed to, that to say, hey, if you're wanting to ask for something from me, then I want you to call me. So you can hear my voice, I can hear your voice, so there's no misunderstanding on what we're agreeing to. And the last thing I would say is just when it comes to bedtime, you know, the average texting teenager is now losing an hour of sleep a night because they're texting in their bedroom. And this is mind-boggling to me because I don't understand why a parent would allow their child to have their cell phone in their bedroom at night. You know, the bedroom is a place for you to go to sleep, not to be texting on your cell phone. And so we have, in our family, 10 o'clock is, it used to be 9 o'clock. Now that our kids have gotten older, we've extended it to 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And so 10 o'clock is screens off time. So no screens whatsoever. That includes TV, computer, iPods, DSs, all those kind of things. Everything has to be shut off. And your cell phone has to be on the kitchen counter at 10 o'clock at night. So it just, you know, it makes it so that the bedroom is a place for you to begin to focus on going to sleep, not having this bright white light, you know, in front of your eyes till all hours of the night.
And you make an interesting point about sleep, because in my line of work, and I mainly deal in education, so I'll have consultations with parents, and they'll say, well, my child often doesn't seem to, in class anyway, not very attentive, often tired, they're dragging their feet, they're grumpy by the end of the day.
Yeah.
And we talk about simple things like diet, but also sleep and all the things that might affect that. And I wouldn't be surprised. I've never really asked before, but maybe I will now. I've never really asked some of these parents before, does your child have a cell phone? Do you regulate that use at night? I think that's an excellent thing an excellent piece of advice for parents. And I also really appreciate what you said about parents. I think you mentioned in your book that parents need – you advise parents to model it first.
Yes.
And I think that's huge, because sometimes as parents we get into this habit where do as I say and not as I do. And I think when
Absolutely.
It comes to – I'm discovering with teenage kids that just doesn't cut it anymore. They're really observing what you're doing, and they're really going to call you out if you demand something from them, but you're doing the opposite. So a great piece of advice there, I would say. You know, so we've talked about the etiquette and some restrictions. What have you observed from families or parents who don't really have restrictions, or they have pretty loose restrictions when it comes to cell phone use? What are some of the potential dangers or consequences that come with having loose restrictions, I guess we could say?
Yeah, I think a lot of times we as parents, we tend to overestimate just how involved we are in our kids' lives when it comes to technology. It's kind of like when you go to the dentist, you know, and the dentist says, have you been flossing? And you think back and you go, I think I remember flossing one time last month. And so you say, oh, yeah, I've been flossing. You know, and what he means is, have you been flossing every day? And so you tend to overestimate just how good you are. So there was a survey done just a few months ago that was reported in the New York Times where they interviewed over 500 teenagers and their parents of those same teens. And they asked the parents, do you have internet safety software or internet blocking software on your child's cell phone? Over 80% of parents said yes. Well, then they asked those teenagers, are there internet blockers on your cell phone? And 17% of them said yes. So, man, this is a huge, range when it comes to numbers of 80% to 17%. You know, so either, you know, you got a large majority of teens that don't realize they've got internet safety software on their phones, which I'm thinking is just not true, or a huge number of parents that are overestimating just how involved they are. And so what happens is when we tend to overestimate, it causes us to not see reality and not want to acknowledge just what our kids may be involved in. And so what I'm seeing is the parents who are not as involved, their kids are getting into unhealthy behavior or practices at an earlier age. And so you've got, like right now, we've got over half, this is in the United States, over half of all 12-year-olds, it's actually 58% of all 12-year-olds have a Facebook account. And now Facebook requires that you have to be at least 13 years old to be on there. Well, how are they getting on there? It's because parents aren't involved to know exactly what their kids are doing on their cell phones and online. Now, the other thing that happened is the potential misuse when it comes to communicating with strangers. Parents say that their greatest fear when it comes to technology is that their child will be contacted by a stranger. And it's a well-warranted fear because 2 out of 3 of all teenagers say that they've been sent an unsolicited text message by a stranger, meaning someone that they had no idea who this person was that they were getting the text message from. And so here, that as parents, if we're not involved, there's a lot of potential things that could happen, with our kids. Also, we haven't even addressed the sexual, issues, that there's very alarming statistics when it comes to the amount of kids, teenagers that are sending sexual text messages and nude and semi-nude photos of themselves. 1 out of 5 of all teens have sent a nude or semi-nude photo of themselves to somebody else. It's more than 40% that have sent a sexually suggestive text message to someone else. And so as a parent, that we, it's important that if you are the one paying for that cell phone, then you own the cell phone. And if you own it, then you need to be checking it to find out what your kids are doing on it.
Yeah, great advice. You mentioned social networking, Facebook. We're going to talk about in just a minute. But
sure.
With the texting,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we can agree it's addictive.
Absolutely.
Why is it so addictive, especially for kids, for teens?
Well, it really is. It's the primary way that they communicate with each other now is through social media and, through the texting. And so it's a very expedient way to communicate with someone. You can, of course, their text messages are not like our text messages. If I was texting you, Mark, I would say, hey, how about next Thursday we meet at, Panera and have coffee, whereas our kids, their text messages are like 4 or 5 characters, and that's it. And
yeah, I noticed that. I tend to write full sentences.
And a thumbs up, that kind of thing. And my daughter sends me these messages and I'm like, I have no idea what you're asking me. It's a question or a statement, do you agree or disagree? And, that kind of thing. So, it's an expedient way to communicate. They can get a lot of information in a short amount of time. And it's a way that they communicate that many times that we don't understand, as parents. And so it kind of gives them their own language. They have created over 5,000, words or phrases that teens have created, through texting. So, they get a bad rap sometimes as being a lazy generation, but I'm telling you, anytime you can get a group of teenagers come up with 5,000 new words, it's pretty pretty smart, savvy group of teenagers there.
Well, and personally, I'd love to be able to speak that language because I text as well, but like I said before, I tend to do it in full sentences. I'd like to be able to expedite that process a little bit. So I don't think that my kids are being lazy myself. I think it's brilliant. I'm pretty old school, I guess.
Right. Yeah, but again, with the texting, what can quickly happen is I was sharing this with a group of parents at a presentation 2 nights ago, you typically don't have a guy who sends a text message to a girl right off the bat that says, hey, how about I come over to your house and you and me find out, just kind of see what happens from there. you know, back in your bedroom. That's not how it happens. You know, it's not a text message right off the bat that says, hey, how about send me a really good picture of yourself that's just between you and I? Usually what happens is the text message says, hey, what are you doing right now? Well, not a whole lot. What are you doing? Well, I'm just hanging at my bedroom. Really, what are you doing in your bedroom? You make him join you in your bedroom? Well, what would we do in your bedroom? You know, it just kind of goes back and forth until about 100 messages later, it becomes an out-and-out proposition for something inappropriate. And you know, with texting, when you're not having to look at the person, you know, it's easy to for things to quickly get carried away and things to get misunderstood. And so before you know it, you know, you've gotten yourself into an inappropriate conversation with someone. You know, my wife and I, we've been a few years ago, we were sitting having a just a time by our fireplace, the two of us, and got a text message from a what was obviously a teenager saying, hey, what are you doing right now? I have no idea who this person is. And so I responded back saying, I'm sorry, I don't have your number on my phone. I don't know who this is. Well, the text message came back and said, hey, it's a game. You have to guess. And I just responded back and said, I'm sorry, I don't play games with strangers through texting. And I got another message saying, come on, just play along. So then I just turned my phone off. Wow. So the next day I get a phone call from that same number. And it was a woman and said, hey, I had some missed calls from this number last night. And I just said, I'm sorry, could I ask you, do you have a teenager in your house? And she said, yeah, I have a 12-year-old. And I said, you may want to ask her what she's doing with your cell phone, because I think she's calling or texting random numbers and getting in conversations with strangers. Wow. That's exactly what was happening. And so our kids, their perception is, well, this is just all fun and games. This is really not that big a deal. You know, again, back to the you know, the inappropriate, you know, sexual type things, you know, there was a survey done. They asked teen girls, why did they send, you know, sexually suggestive text messages? And 66% of them said it was to be fun or flirty. Now, here it is that when, you know, you and I were in school, you know, you said you had teenagers, Mark. So I'm guessing, you know, you and I were both kids back in the 70s, you know, teens in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And If we were going to flirt with someone, you'd put a note in their locker, you know, you'd put a note on their car, or, you know, you'd pull a girl's hair in the hallway, you know, that kind of thing. But today, if a teenager is going to be fun or flirty, well, they're going to send a sexually suggestive text message to each other. And so we just see how our culture has changed and how technology has changed how they live out their own sexuality and boundaries.
Well, boy, I think there's probably a lot more that can be said, and again, just for those who are listening and they're just chomping at the bit to hear more. Again, I want to encourage them to take a look at your book because you go into all these things in even more detail. So,
yeah, but let's start. It's available. You can get it through Tech Savvy Parenting. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it digitally on your Kindle or your iPad. You can order it from your local bookstore as well. It's available just about everywhere.
Okay, and we'll also cover that off at the end too, because I want to remind people where they can get that. But that's great for them to have that information. So let's turn our focus to social networking. We touched on that, and we did touch on the fact that with Facebook, they require that kids or people need to be 13 years and older to have an mm-hmm. account. Now, I know plenty of parents who kind of look at that and say, "Oh, that's just kind of a guideline. My son or daughter, they're more mature, they're pretty savvy for their age, so I think it's totally fine." What's your response to that? To parents who say that sort of thing?
Wow, I'm baffled by it. Now, Mark, I believe you're in Canada. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so here in the United States, we have what's called the COPPA Act mm-hmm. that was signed into law 10 years ago, the Child Online Protection and Privacy Act. And right now, our legislature they're having to decide if they're going to renew it or not. And there's heavy lobbying from the tech industry not to renew it or to heavily revise it because they don't like the whole notion of not being able to get information from someone who's under 13 years old, right, because that's a huge demographic group of people that are online. But nonetheless, right now, the law says that you can't get private, you can't get personal information from anyone under 13, which is why all of these tech companies, not just sites like Facebook and Twitter, but apps as well that our kids are on, like say Ask.fm, mm-hmm. Snapchat, Vine, Tumblr, Kick Messenger, all of them, Instagram, that you have to sign as part of the user agreement that says that, yes, I am 13 years old. Of course, we know that all you have to do is scroll through the user agreement. At the bottom, you click yes. Mm-hmm. So it's not like there's a high bar, you know, of accountability that we've created in these things. But I was talking to a group of parents, and I asked them, I said, how many of you have kids that are under 13? And, you know, a good number raised their hand. And I would say, how many of you, your kids, they're on Facebook right now? How many of them have an Instagram right now? And Instagram actually is kind of the first iteration of social networking. I'm seeing that younger tweens, you know, 8 to 12-year-olds are getting on. That I'm sure you've seen it too, Mark, 8, 9, 10-year-olds on Instagram. I was talking with a parent just last weekend who said, you know, that my 9-year-old, I set up an Instagram for her because she wanted a place to share her Polly Pockets and her littlest pet pictures, you know, these kids' toys. And so she was, you know, arranging them on her shelf and taking photographs. And I said, how many photos has she shared? And she said, oh, she's connected to somewhere around 900 people on Instagram. I thought, there's no way that an 8- and 9-year-old knows 900 people, you know? And so is she connected to adults? Absolutely. You would be a fool as a parent to not think that your 8-year-old is connected to adults on Instagram. And so Instagram, I think actually, you know, before we make it sound like it's a you know, bad thing, I would say it's probably the safest of all the social networkings out there, because you can set your privacy, your profile to private, and it's primarily a photo sharing app. But I've asked it my own children, my own teenagers, has a stranger ever sent you something that you would consider inappropriate? And both of them have said yes. And so, you know, again, you've got to use wisdom as a parent to know, is this appropriate for your child? Is your child mature enough? You know, and is it legal? Now, I think that, I guess back to answer your original question, what do I think about under 13-year-olds being on there? To me, it's an issue of integrity. That if we as parents, we turn the blind eye, we give a wink, wink, and a nod, or we even go in and we set up the accounts of our children. You know, there was a survey done where they asked parents who allowed their 10, 11, 12-year-olds to be on Facebook, and 88% of those parents said that they felt like it was okay for their child to lie to set up the account. Hmm. Now, what that means to me is 88% of parents just told their children that integrity is not that big a deal. That if it's really not going to hurt anybody, then it's okay to lie on these, you know, white lie kind of things that we call them. But I've been telling my son, we've been having conversations since he was 8 and 9 years old about what character means, what it means to be a man. And I've told him that character is what you do in private when no one's going to find out. And so here it is. One, we've let our kids set up an account where there's very little accountability. And then two, we're going to let them go out into the wide, wide world on these apps and websites talking to strangers where we know that's going to happen and there's very little accountability. And so I feel like we are setting our children up for a moral failure when we allow them to get in there before they're ready.
You know, that's an excellent point. I mean, like I said, I deal with families mainly in the realm of education, but it's amazing how – in general, parents seem to take for granted, I guess, the little things, and we can call them white lies or what have you. Like this is fairly harmless. This is not really going to, damage or influence my child's moral character. But the kids are paying attention, and you make a good point. If these parents are, they might not be outright saying to their kids, "It's okay for you to lie," but for them to say, "Oh, don't worry about, you know, you're 12 or you're 11. Well, let's set up your account and we'll lie about your age and so on and so forth." They're paying attention to that. So there's absolutely. The message is, if it suits your needs or your desires, then go ahead and lie. It's not going to harm anyone. And I think that's something that many parents take for granted. And when you put it in those terms, and you do that in your book, when you put it in those terms, I think it really makes parents think hard about that.
Yeah, it's a character issue. It's a, you know, character development. As a practical example, I got a message on Facebook, and I actually called around to several other buddies of mine because I saw that this person whom the message came from was connected to all of us. And I was able to conclude that it was actually a spam message. But the message had a picture of what looked like a high school girl, and it said, hey, thanks for connecting with me on Facebook, and I'm so glad we can be friends. I would love to share some pictures with you. Here's my cell number. You know, give me a call and let's chat. And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't connect with teenagers on Facebook. You know, and I saw that, like I said, she was connected to some other adults. So I called them and they were like, I got the same message. And I thought, okay, let's say that my 11-year-old is on Facebook and they get that message. Are they gonna have the life experience? You know, are they gonna have the having used this long enough to be able to recognize that that's a spam? Because it sure looked legit. And then all of a sudden now they're calling that cell number or they're sending a text message to that number. And yes, I'd love to chat with you. Well, now the stranger's got my kid's cell phone number. Right. You know, it can quickly get carried away, and which is why I think there's a healthy regulations. Hey, let's work the system. The system says 13 years old. There's something to be said for delayed gratification. You know, let's and not to mention, I think, you know, when we were kids, I think the first rite of passage for us was turning 15, 16 and getting your driver's license.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, you know, you look forward to that day and, you know, and all the things that we went through to get our license. You know, you go to driver's ed class, you have to go through the horrific experience of driving with your mom and dad for months, you know, and hearing their criticism. Yep. You know, you got to take a written test, a driving test, an eye test, and, you know, all these different hoops we got to jump through to get that first rite of passage. Well, I think social media is the new rite of passage for our children, so that when they turn 13, you know, they're asking, can I get a Facebook? Can I have a Twitter? Can I get on Tumblr and Kick and all these things? And we can say yes to some of those, but let's wait till you're 13 and let's work the system. And so like what I did with my son when he turned 13, you know, that there is on Facebook, it's called the Family Safety Center. And so I had him read all the information on the safety center, and then I created a 10-question quiz that I gave him. And I said, you know, hey, it's basically just a fill-in-the-blank off some sentences off the quiz to make sure he read it. You know, if you get them all right, then ding, ding, you made it through the first hoop. You know, the next hoop is we sit down together and we'll create your profile together. The next hoop is you got to agree that we are always connected to each other. Your profile is going to be set to private, that I can see what you say, you know, so that it just creates some accountability and an excitement level that this is a big deal, you know, to be able to have this rite of passage.
Yeah, and you talk about that in your book. I mean, you basically are saying this is a way to prepare your teen to have a degree of common sense and caution. And in chapter 7, this is something I wanted you to talk about for just a minute. You have a short section that you've titled "The Benefits of Delaying the Inevitable." So, chapter 7 is called "How Young Is Too Young for Facebook," and there's a section "Benefits of Delaying the Inevitable." Take us through that for a second. I know you're already touching on that now.
Well, I think we are our culture. We live in such a you can have it when you want it, you know, kind of a culture. And, you know, instant gratification. And so to say to our children, you know, that, hey, this is a big deal. To me, it creates a level of responsibility, you know, and maturity when we say to them, hey, you know what? I want you to have a Facebook. I want you to be able to be on Kick. You know, I'm okay with that. You can have an Instagram, but let's make this part of your 13th birthday. And for my kids, we really made the 13-year-old birthday that I said to my son, childhood is over. You know, and now we're working from this day forward, we and I together, we're working toward what it means to be a man. You know, so welcome to manhood. And part of your manhood is you can connect with other people, you know, on social networking. And so it kind of created that, set that bar, you know, for him, that there's a level of maturity, you know, and a level of behavior that I expect out of him.
Yeah, and so many parents, I mean, whether it's social media or just other, I guess we could call them more grown-up activities, seem to be in a hurry to have their kids be more grown up. And, you know, particularly with – and you mentioned this already – with the social networking, I mean, getting them prepared. You know, I think a lot of parents expect that their kids will just – they hit a certain age or a certain milestone and they are instantly matured as opposed to walking them through that, taking them through that maturing process. And I think that that's great advice because I know some parents might listen to this and go, well – my child is pretty mature for his or her age. Well, how do you know this? Have you taken these steps or similar steps to ensure that that's been happening? And don't be in such a rush, whether it's with social networking or other social, you know, so-called grown-up things. And
absolutely. Yeah. You know, the average child's first cell phone is now age 11. And I'm thinking, Mark, I don't understand this. What does an 11-year-old need a cell phone for?
Right.
You know, but yet we've got over 1 out of 3 of all 11, 12-year-olds now own their own, not borrowing mom's, you know, to here, take this to youth group with you to church, or take this with you to, you know, your piano play or ballet recital, you know, ballet play so you can call me when it's over, you know, but saying, I'm going to buy you your own phone. And of course, we know there's only 2 flip phones left on the market.
Right.
So chances are when you buy your kid a phone, you're going to give them a phone that has access to the whole wide world. And again, we've already talked about the majority of parents aren't setting up restrictions on these phones, which means the children can download whatever they want to on the phone, you know, and connect with apps that the parent may not know about. It's like one of the things that we did with our kids when they got their first iPods when they were younger is we had everything set up on one account. Matter of fact, now Apple has, as part of the new iOS 8 software that came out just 2 weeks ago, they have created a thing called Family Share, and it's very easy to set up in your settings. And so you have one account. I mean, everybody can have their own iTunes account, but it's all linked to one master user, so to speak. And so right now, all my kids can have their own, so they can download their own music, their own apps. But what happens is, anything that they want to download, it sends me a text message first and says, your child is trying to download, or this user is trying to download the Kick app, you know, or Hot or Not, or, you know, some app that I would obviously disapprove of. And it, I have to allow it or not allow it. And then what it does is it gives me a chance to go to my teenager and say, hey, I saw the day that you were trying to download this TV show or this song or this app, and you know, what's going on there? Why did you feel like you needed that? You know, and so it's setting me up to have a healthy conversation with my kid instead of it being an awkward thing of going and saying, hey, I just saw this on your phone. You know, now we got to talk about it.
Right. All right. So that concludes part one of our series on tech savvy parenting. Stay tuned for next week's episode where Brian and I continue our discussion and we focus on things like protecting your teen's online reputation. We also talk about cyberbullying and then the allure and danger of internet pornography. So as always, if you have any comments or questions, you can visit our website, stuffforparents.com, and go to the comments section there. You can also email comments@stuffforparents.com. You can follow me on Twitter, MarkLapointEDU, or go to Facebook and you can follow us there. Just look for Stuff for Parents. Also in the show notes, which you'll find on our website, you can find information or links to Brian Houseman, his book, and his website as well. So stay tuned for next week and we'll talk to you then. Bye for now.